really important that us on the left sort of make a strong stand against anti-Semitism, because it's a very key success of our movements, but also success of the cause of fighting anti-Semitism. And sort of the other key point that I think is really important from April Rosenblum is sort of the cyclical nature of anti-Semitism, which is that, you know, usually we associate oppression with you know, theft of resources, colonization, slavery, things like that, kinds of stuff that are going on in Palestine right now. But it doesn't always look like that. In the case of Jews, it looks much more like Jews are given the ability to rise in power, in part because Jews having power enables Jews to be scapegoats, because it's very difficult to sort of assume that folks who are oppressed are really controlling the action. Whereas Jews, you know, the idea is that if Jews are in strong positions of power, it's easy to blame them for the things that are going on.
Thanks, Ira. Okay.
I guess my question to follow up with that, do you think that anti-Semitism is a problem in Occupy? Or does it exist within Occupy?
I'm trying to think about how to ask this, because it's inherently, like, I think, a delicate issue when talking about Palestinian solidarity and anti-Semitism. I want to, like, piggyback off of what Lev said, that, like, anti-Semitism is something that right tries to claim as its struggle, and we have a responsibility as people who are interested in social justice for everyone to not allow that to happen. I think part of that is acknowledging anti-Semitism when and where it happens, even if it is politically delicate in our responsibilities as Palestinian solidarity activists to maintain solidarity. So, I mean, you know, part of it is acknowledging that, you know, when anti-Semitism has historically happened and does happen in in the Arab Middle East, and occasionally within the Arab American community in the U.S. By no means does that mean that that is something that is inherent or endemic to the Palestinian solidarity movement or to the Middle East in general. Anti-Semitism is something that is not like just as it's not systemic within all of Europe, is by no means systemic within all of Middle East and has its own historical context just as it does in Europe. So I guess the question is, what's our responsibility as anti-Zionist Jews or Jewish Palestinian solidarity activists to, I guess, confront anti-Semitism or acknowledge the history of anti-Semitic incidents in the Arab Middle East without sort of fueling the flames of like Zionist claims of systemic Arab anti-Semitism?
Can I follow up? I just wanted to specify a little bit more. So, because like you mentioned in the talk about the adbusters, right before Occupy happened, maybe actually a few years before, like 2009 or something, they publicized a list of like the prominent Jewish yurkans. Was that anti-Semitic? Do you think? Like, to specify.
Right. Anybody want
to? I want to say one thing. I know this is a workshop that's explicitly about anti-Semitism, but I'm having a little bit of discomfort about talking about anti-Semitism in isolation from other forms of oppression, and in talking about it, like, just really wanting to make sure that, and I'm just trying to not exceptionalize it, even as we talk about it directly and explicitly. And I think it's just important to consciously hold that. I mean, to answer your question before you made it more specific, from my perspective, there probably is some anti-Semitism in Occupy Wall Street. I mean, and it isn't about the sign someone holds, or it's about that, you know, that's something that exists to some extent in society, and therefore it's reflected in people who participate in movements. Right, and I mean the same goes for any other oppression, and certainly for racism, for sexism, that stuff is all right, and that stuff in this moment I think is much more pronounced and prevalent in this country and in this way. And so I think that that stuff is probably significantly more present in Occupy. And, you know, so in a way that, so that's on the one hand. On the other hand, I personally, in my experience with Occupy, haven't felt it. And then, does somebody else want to take the piece on Adbusters?
I would say so. I would say that identifying people based on a particular, well, specifically Jews, like what to what end, and given the history of singling out Jews as something, where is that going? I mean, I don't see a significance in someone's political, like someone being a neocon. You don't have to be Jewish to be a neocon. Just as we've talked about, you know, there is some diversity within the conservative movement, like that they, and it seems like a pretty explicit tactic. Like they're looking for ways to co-opt the language of liberation. And liberation struggles to give credence to what they're doing, to cover up what they're doing. So I think that I'm going to speak for myself personally. I think one of the things that I see that allows this issue to get muddy is that within the West, by and large, Jews are white, so we have a lot of white privilege to insulate us from anti-Semitism in a way that that Jews of colors don't. You know, I think there's a reason why it gets privileged. I think one of the reasons is because to a degree, this is, I think, can be explicit. You know, I think one of the ways to drive division between, say, the civil rights movement was to show that black people are particularly anti-Semitic, as opposed to, or more anti-Semitic than white people. You know, so I think there's that dynamic to it. And that doesn't mean that it's not real, but there is an interplay between race, class, and all that kind of stuff that has an effect, that has an impact.
So in I want to first respond to this idea of Arab anti-Semitism, and just like. Kind of in the ways that I learned about racism, there was a distinction made between that I heard racism explained as prejudice with power, and so that there's a real, that what makes racism distinct is that it's about people imposing power over others, and that it's not just a prejudice, it's not just an irrational hatred of people for this reason, it's the power that backs that up. And so I think when we think about Arab anti-Semitism, for me, power is multiple and operates in different ways, but Arab anti-Semitism or Arab hatred of Jews or whatever you want to call it, I'm not even sure I want to call it anti-Semitism because I think it has such a distinct history and construction. And I think that history and construction in a lot of ways has been actively fostered by Zionism and by Israel, because when you're creating the idea of, you know, this is the Jewish state, and then a soldier comes and kicks down your door, or you're reading about this happening to other Arabs, who do you think is doing it? You think Jews are doing it, because that's the self-image that's being promoted and created by Israel. So I think that we need to, on the one hand, understand that dynamic. At the same time, when people are spouting things that are racist or anti-Semitic, we do need to respond to it, distance ourselves from them, and move forward with our real, you know, our central work. Like, deal with it, certainly not try to work with people who are promoting that, and certainly countering what they're putting out there, but at the same time, keeping, right? Because another thing is that if you're constantly, yeah, I don't know. I guess I want to wrap it up there.
I think that one thing that also kind of comes into the mix, as well as like racism, class, and gender, is also the like idea of the state and the nation. And I'm wondering about the Durban stuff. Who, you know, the with the 2,000 delegates from, or 3,000 delegates from America and the X number of delegates from Y country, like, who were they? Like who are the people who went on behalf of America? And how does the role of nationalisms or like state actors or or us being like Americans relate to the work that we are doing, but how does our relationship as Americans to which is and that our national identity and that national identity relate to the nationalist identity in Zionism?
My understanding of who those 2,000 delegates were from the first Durban conference was people who were part of mass-based civil rights movements within the U.S. So organizations like the NAACP and other civil rights groups really fundraising to get their bases to South Africa.
That it wasn't, they weren't there representing the U.S. in any form. They were there from the U.S. I mean, because the U.S. formally withdrew. So it's, right, there are these two parallel conferences. There's the state-level conferences, and then there's the NGO conferences. And so at the NGO conference, I think that's where these delegates mm-hmm. were. And so they were coming from, right, exactly, mass-based organizations primarily.
Or being represented in the, like, official proceedings.
Member states. So member states of the UN can be represented in those.
I'm a little confused about the second part of your question.
Yeah, maybe I should
I'm sorry.
Think how I'm phrasing it. Like, how does our role as a lot of the folks you spoke about were American nationals, and how does our role as an American national within America, or you know, the role of
I just wanted to sort of respond to some of the last round of back and forth because I actually disagree with you, Lee. I think that using the definition of prejudice plus power is not sufficient when talking about anti-Semitism. I said it's not to exceptionalize anti-Semitism, but rather to talk about the ways that anti-Semitism is different from other forms of oppression, because every form of oppression does look different, and it's important to think about the ways that anti-Semitism looks different from other forms of oppression. I think in that context, because that there is this element of like, oh, the Jews are the people in power, so key in anti-Semitism, it actually makes it really important for us to confront anti-Semitism coming from the left. And that goes back to what you were talking about, because I think both of you were talking about, in fact, because I think there is actually quite a lot of anti-Semitism on the left that's largely going unchallenged. And I think this is true in Occupy Wall Street, and I say this not, you know, from a perspective of like, oh God, like they're coming after Israel. You know, I say this from a perspective of like, oh God, it's really easy to discredit this movement because of all this anti-Semitism that's coming out of it. And that's true of the Palestinian Solidarity Movement as well. There's a lot of anti-Semitism that comes out of that movement that weakens that movement for Palestinian rights because it's infused with language around, you know, Zionist conspiracy, Jews controlling the media, Jews controlling the banks, Jews occupying the American government, Jews being responsible for wars. That language comes out a lot in the left, not a little bit, a lot. And I think it's really important that we confront that language because it's wrong, because it's anti-Semitic, and because it's bad for the movement.
I have a problem with you focused your talk on the problems around Zionism. But I think that the message has to be repeated even more frequently that prejudice against people of the Jewish faith is different from colonial Zionism, which is different from Israeli nationalism. And that unless we persist and really work at giving things their proper name, we promote the misunderstanding which comes from the failure to make that distinction. So yeah, a lot of people refer to the Jews when they really mean Israeli nationalists. And a lot of people refer, you know, to the Jews in other contexts, and we're the only ones who can make and drive home that distinction so that people understand that. That there are, I mean, I was part of the original, you know, Not In My Name, which was trying to point out that Jews opposed many of these practices and in fact, and that their name was being misused. And of course, that's very comfortable for the Zionist and colonialist forces, because that confusion gives them ammunition. But I think that we need to find a way to ram home the definitions and the distinctions between the various forces. I don't know whether there is much anti-Jewish prejudice in Occupy, for instance, or in the left, but there certainly is plenty of opposition to the colonial Zionism and opposition to Israeli nationalism and the outrageous international behavior in Israel.
Right. I mean, perhaps we didn't underscore that enough, but that, I mean, that is part of the reason for our existence as a Jewish anti-Zionist network. And that is really important in severing, in countering anti-Semitism, is de-linking Jewishness and Zionism. And I mean, we're all for that project, for sure. And but you know, I was just looking at the coverage of the killings in France of four Jews and others, and it was really gross, the way the news coverage, you know, at the bottom of the article, and Netanyahu says this is an attack against Israel. It's an attack against Jews. You know, it's not... Israel has nothing to do with it. And that helps cement the idea that the only safe place for Jews is in Israel, which we have to counter that.
I think some of what you're saying have definitely been addressed. In fact, that's part of the whole point of what this whole experience has been about. Lee, what was the term you used as opposed to anti-Semitism in the very beginning of your talk that means the same thing?
Jewish?
So, well, anti-Semitism is a loaded term. It could also be called...
Well, I was. What I was trying to do is distinguish between, and I think this actually speaks to what Lev was saying, is that I was trying to distinguish between anti-Semitism by those with people who have power over, and anti-Semitism from people who... And so I was calling anti-Semitism, I don't know if it's a useful intervention
or
not. Right, I was saying anti-Semitism, I was referring to European anti-Semitism, and I was saying maybe we need a different word to talk about, right, to talk about how Jews are targeted sometimes in the Arab world,
well,
right? And that, yeah.
Anti-Jewish racism. As opposed to anti-Jewish racism is one thing, and fighting the national terrorism of the Israeli Zionists is another thing. And de-linking, I think, is the most important thing. To try to lump them back together and say liberals have both and we better watch out is kind of taking everything we've done today and saying ignore that. We just got to be real scared of anti-Semitism in all parts of the world, in all in all philosophies of politics. And that's partly true, but I think what you're saying, Lee, was that it's going to be everywhere. Some things you can't change in a person's mind. and much of that racism is irrational. It's there. The national terrorism that goes under the name of Zionism is not irrational. It's very, very calculated. And their attempts to use anti-Semitism as an excuse, I think, is what we're here trying to understand so we can help other people dealing with that too, as opposed to try to lump it all together and say, oh my gosh, lefties can be just as bad as right.
Can I just clarify that I wasn't suggesting that the fact that anti-Semitism is present because it's present in society means that it shouldn't be addressed. I just wanted to clarify that.
Oh, well, of course.
Yes.
Thank you for this great workshop. I really appreciate a lot of what you talked about, especially this. I want to go back to not privileging anti-Semitism over other oppressions, and I think you know that's a very key piece of what you're talking about, and has to. As a Jew, you know, I think especially, you know, I was brought up that was the worst thing, you know, and there was one Holocaust with capital H and no other really bad things had ever happened to other people. And I think it's really important to recognize that racism and oppression, you know, is a much bigger than one ism or anti-ism. And I think, you know, there used to be, I don't know if it's still around, but in the 80s, I did a lot of work in the sanctuary movement, and there was a thing called interrupting racism. There was a sort of an approach to interrupting, and it was called interrupting racism. And I think it's a really valuable tool, and I think it's really important for all of us to interrupt every kind of racist, oppressive, you know, terrible speech or action by anybody. And I love that you say not to privilege one against the other. I think it's interesting and useful to differentiate them. But still, it always comes back to speaking out against all forms of oppression, which is, you know, a long one, because it makes us have to learn a lot of things about a lot of things. But I think it's really important, and I very much appreciate your...
Why is it a problem? Is it a problem mainly because it discredits the movement, or is it a problem because it clouds people's judgment because it's a pernicious?
For me, one of the reasons it is problematic is because it is contrary to the world I wish to live in. And I would assume that most people would agree that they want to live in a liberated world, right? So you can't have a liberated world with anti-Semitism in it. At the same time, what people of color, working class, etc. Like there's, as you were saying, there's, I think you said there's like a difference in the ways in which oppressions manifest themselves. Of oppression, racism, etc. That's a hell of a principle, though. Like that's hard to follow through in a practical way. So I do think it's also about, you also have to weigh that. I have to weigh that with choosing my battles. I also have to weigh that with the particular circumstances. So when I was in Palestine, living in a small village with Palestinians who were surrounded by Israeli settlements on three sides. You know, when they, and who had a pretty strong and ongoing relationship with an Israeli guy who would come over and work with them quite a bit, you know, when they would talk, when they would say things that were anti-Semitic, like that's a different dynamic than being being in America in a predominantly Christian country and experiencing anti-Semitism here. So I do think we have to think about the circumstances we're in. And I think always for me when I'm trying to interrupt a moment of oppression or doing my best, it's like let's unpack it. What are the facts that we're dealing with here? You know, and that I think is something that can happen in any community, whether you're working side by side with Palestinians or whatever grouping, and you have to make sure that we have to balance that with not using it to derail with derailing the struggle. And to me, it's that back and forth that allows us to build the new relationship, the change that we're hoping to see.
Right. And materially, you know, there's not, as far as I know, in the U.S. a big problem with the racial profiling of Jews. You know, if you're getting pulled over because of your race, it's not because the police officer thinks that you're Jewish, it's because you're black or brown. You know, there is institutionalized discrimination. You could even use the word apartheid in Arizona, in Alabama, with all the anti-immigrant legislations that's happening. You know, but people aren't. Just Jews are not targeted in the same way in the U.S. to the extent.
And just to add to that a little bit, like I think part of what's tricky about anti-Semitism, and I think, is that it often it's treated in a way sometimes it feels historically static. That it's like we are in a very different historical moment from the aftermath of the Holocaust, and I think the reality of Jews is very different than that. And that there are institutions and forces that are conscientiously working very hard, pouring tons of money into treating it as something that's historically static. And I think, you know, I'm not, it's right, again, it's not saying that it's not important or relevant and doesn't need to be addressed, but that I just want to hold that there is also this, how does it operate in different historical periods, what moment are we in, and how is it operating in this moment?
I do think that's important in the sense that we see a lot of forces that we're working against, using it, pretending that they care so very much about the Jewish people. And it, I mean, it's like, it's skin crawling how paternalistic and opportunistic it is. It, you know, it's gross. So I just, I, like, to me, obviously there's a difference in oppressing somebody by taking something away and giving something to someone because you want to use them for something, right? Which is what Christian Zionism and the conservative movement is using Jews and Israel for. And to me, that speaks to what Leah's saying about the historical moment.
Okay, Abby.
So I want to first off echo what Lev was saying earlier, that I do think that that it's really important to make sure that we acknowledge that, you know, these forms of anti-Semitism do exist, even if they don't manifest themselves in the ways that you described, that, like, very present and very, you know, horrendous, like, anti-immigration sentiments and racial profiling in this country. I think that I've been struggling this whole time to kind of think about it, because I do think that there is, you know, we don't want to make anti-Semitism, you know, exceptional and, like, say that it's the most important thing, but, like, at the same time, like, I do think you need to treat it very differently, because as much as all oppressions are tied together and that to fight oppression is to, you know, fight in one struggle, like, you're not going to be doing the same things when you're struggling against anti-Semitism that you're going to do when you're struggling against racial profiling. And so I think that I don't quite know. I think that while the struggles are tied together, that it is important to separate them in the same way that something like IJN exists, because it's a specifically Jewish, and yet it seems like the idea of the organization is a specifically, like, Jewish response to Zionism, because it is a specific, I don't know, it's like, it's acknowledging how specific anti-Semitism is, and how talking about it in a, you know, specific Jewish way can be important.
And I've got, you know, I didn't write down your name last time, I apologize.
Dave,
yes. Oh, I'm sorry. Do you mind if I... Let's...
Did you just read your name? Oh, you can. Oh, okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Responding to both, why would we oppose anti-Semitism besides the discredits movement and the statement that racism is prejudice of power, how you said it? I think, I go back to the old saw that anti-Semitism is the socialism of fools. And I think it's very important to confront racism without power, and because I think the basis of anti-Semitism is, rather than looking at Chinese sentiment from Southeast Asia, like, and like many of the many parallel currents of prejudice, is a way and in the wake of the Holocaust, anti-Semitism is you know, theoretically off the table in American society, but I think if you dig a little deeper, you find a lot of and so I think that's why, you know, aside from this, you should always oppose any prejudice and any ignorant scapegoating. I think in terms of the struggle or in terms of wanting to make a more liberated society, it's really important to clear that away, because so many people experience the oppression as a problem because
how capitalism and imperialism, like, how that works. Even though, you know, it exists, but instead to focus on
that if we want to talk about sort of specific behaviors and that kind of thing, I'm not sure if that's what people are thinking about or asking for. I think it's similar to probably what one of my favorite responses, and this goes back to the circumstances and this. So-and-so is Jewish, the guy that comes in and has been working with you guys for years. And they're like, yeah, okay, you know. And like, over time, like, there's no anti-Semitic threat from that village. Even if they have anti-Semitic sentiments, there's no way they have the enough power to pose a serious threat to Jews, right? So, you know, that of course is different than being perhaps in circumstances where you have, again, I think we're talking more about the American situation where you have a lot of anti-Semitism probably underneath. John Hagee's church, who are thrilled with the idea of Israel because they can get rid of Jews, you know.
And others.
We're getting close to time, and there are two people on the list, so why don't we take those two and then throw it back for a wrap-up? Did that work?
Sure.
Great. Okay.
Yeah, I think it's a mistake to elevate anti-Jewish hatred. Anti-Semitism is how it's been effectively marketed. So it doesn't matter in the advertising world in which these concepts are infused in people's consciousness, that Arabs are also Semitic and abused. I think it's a mistake for us to elevate anti-Semitism, meaning hatred against Jews, because it creates a special class of abused people. There's plenty of people who are abused who would like that to stop, and they see the attention being given to a particular class, which they then are indoctrinated with ideas about their special status, not just being targeted for hatred, but a special status ascribed to them that can be linked falsely or correctly in some local instances to their miserable conditions. I really see that there's a power, there is a global power structure. It's been around for a long time. If you want to deny it exists, look at the way international financing has evolved over time and the way the banks, whoever controls the banks, have controlled market flows and colonial policies. Their power, and they have well thought out policies about how they can deflect from themselves onto various groups of people. The Jews serve as one of them, but there's also the Roma who, maybe not in numbers, material numbers, have suffered as longer, and yet go unrecognized, and you've got a Holocaust in Turkey as well, that people are struggling to identify. So I think we have to equate all oppression as the same, all racism as the same, and as this lady said, need to recognize our responsibility as Jews or people who are oriented towards maintaining our humanity to intervene in whatever way we can. It doesn't mean that we all intervene in the same way, but in whatever way we can.
I wanted to throw myself on to take a crack at one of the questions that came up earlier, and then throw it back.
I think just about one thing you were saying about the manipulation of Judaism by Jews to for certain ends. I think that kind of...
By some.
Sorry, Dave. I think that I think that actually that gets the point of that. I think that the part of what I was kind of wondering about before is the role of, when we say Zionist organization, like, who is that? I mean, is that Jews? Like, who are, I don't think it is. And as Rosenblum says, like, Zionism is like perpetuated by the ruling class for the ruling class, and I think that part of what I think gets lost when we say Zionist is that power dynamic and who is actually behind that, because Zionism. It often elicits ideas of Jews, obviously, and also of Israeli nationals, and I think that makes for it kind of that helps kind of cloud the idea of like What is the national character or the class character or the racial or gender character of the folks who are like, and this gets back to my point about the Durbin stuff, like the delegates from different organizations, when we kind of talk about them in terms of like Zionist or kind of otherwise, it's important also at the same time to say like, well, what does that mean about who is actually perpetuating these and like what role they play in their own society and society at large.
Thanks, Simon. So I just wanted to throw in a quick point. I mean, I think the two things that I really liked about this presentation, I think the stuff about not privileging anti-Semitism, sort of, you know, and understanding ourselves as people who want to see an end to all forms of oppression, you know, like thinking through taking that point really seriously and coupling that with the thought that like oppressions, that every form of oppression has a history and like plays a different role in society, and that those roles change over time. I think that you like did a really good job with that, with like showing the history of, you know, of anti-Semitism, like actually has very particular historical origins, was taken up particular moments. I mean, I think, it's like combining those two things in investigating this stuff is like the clearest way to get a kind of total picture of the role that oppression plays in society, and also to get a sense of how to fight it. I don't often hear people make the distinction that you made, Lee, between when responding to questions about what gets called Arab anti-Semitism, and I thought it was a really useful distinction after thinking about it. At first, I was sort of like, I don't know if I want to, you know. So the intervention worked. I learned something from it. But at first, I was like, I don't know if I want to say that, because I think. Because like one line that I often use when addressing a similar question is something like, well, if you want to talk about, you know, the greatest sort of purveyor of anti-Semitism in the world, you know, is Zionism, right? Because it wants to build this association and claim the entire history and culture and religion of Judaism and, you know, for itself, right? And to say that like we are this thing, and therefore anyone who is opposed to, you know, right, like they want to pull that together. So. And I think it's like, and I, the reason why I reacted was like, well, that means I kind of can't make that point anymore, or at least, you know, use the sort of slogan, like, which you could sloganize as like, you know, the greatest purveyor of anti-Semitism in the world today is.
Oh, right.
You see what I'm saying?
Right. Well, I mean,
maybe you can't still make it. I don't know. That's all.
I think you can't make it linguistically.
Yeah.
You have to explain it a little bit more
with the content. Okay. Yeah.
Zionism brands all forms of discrimination or racism towards Jews as anti-Semitism in the European construct.
Yeah. Totally. Okay. Yeah. I see. Okay.
Is there someone else who wanted to speak or had a question? No.
Cool.
All right,
thanks.
Oh, so what do we mean when we talk about Zionism? And one of the reasons, I think one of the reasons why we are the International Jewish Anti-Zionist Network is because we're trying to disassociate Judaism from Zionism and understand Zionism as an ideology and a political movement. And many of the supporters of that movement are Jewish, but they are also Christian and various other religions, and that it's about people who are interested in advancing that ideology and that movement. And that's what we're talking about when we talk about Zionism and Zionist institutions.
And just to add to that, maybe this is already clear, but when speaking, it's really useful to make a distinction between Zionists and Zionist institution or Zionist ideology, and to really clarify that you're speaking about the movement that is Zionism as opposed to Zionist individuals, because that, I agree, it can get really cloudy.
Oh. So I guess...
Would it be fair to say that there's no Judaism in Zionism?
I mean, you could make that claim, and I think there's some...
People would deny it, but...
There's no religious basis.
No. Although many confused people who feel that they're Jews, at least they've culturally grown up that way, and they go through the motions of, in temples, associate it. You know, they have a deep need to associate their identity with that political movement, and that's where I think they're led astray to their own disadvantage, because as the course of events go, the blowback will not just be in the Middle East. It will be here as things seem to be progressing more and more disastrous results.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's truth in what you say. I think that I wouldn't want to get into a religious debate with someone about where Judaism is, you know.
I wasn't.
Right. I think that to me the reason I'm involved in the Jewish International Jewish Anti-Zionist Network is because I believe that its goals are a society where a liberated society where I'm not going to have one of the benefits is I'm not going to have to deal with the kind of anti-Semitic nonsense I have in the past, you know. But it's going to be a lot better than that, even.
Right.
You know. Exactly. Exactly. I would much rather live in that world.
So, thank you everybody for coming. We do have some literature that we can offer.
And